Ocean Quinn, congratulations. We're sitting here in beautiful surroundings of the Mansion House in Dublin. You've recently been elected Lord Mayor of Dublin. So on behalf of people of North Dublin, congratulations.
Thanks very much, Chair.
And as I said, this will be an easy interview, just a chat to get to know you. And we might come back again and have a...
You'll be very welcome to.
A more pointed interview.
Yeah.
Can I ask you, are you going to live here?
We're going to live here a bit. I have three youngish kids, and in terms of where they are in school, I think it'll probably make more sense for us to stay at home. But over the summer, we're going to try and spend a bit of time here because of the opportunity that there is to be in the Mansion House, and maybe in the run-up to Christmas, or if there's a particular event on, we may do so, yeah.
So you will keep a room here?
Keep a bit of a presence here, yeah.
What is a Lord Mayor as opposed to a mayor?
Well, the title of Lord Mayor was given to the Mayor of Dublin back in 1665. Mm. So up until then, for the previous 400 odd years, from 1229, you had a Mayor of Dublin. And in those days, giving the title of Lord Mayor to the Mayor was an extra honour from the Crown, so to speak. So it represented an extra level of status to the city. So back... I mean, I've read a little bit about the history of this, having getting ready for the role, and the sense then would have been largely the mayor was someone who was elected representing the business interests in the city, and Dublin was an important and at sometimes very important trading city with a busy port, and from their point of view, to get the title of Lord Mayor for their mayor was seen as a win or a success or an enhancement of the role. Nowadays, I think it's probably kept really as part of the history, but it may be that in not too many years we will see the Lord bit dropped from the title.
That brings us maybe a bit sooner than I intended, but directly elected mayors.
Yeah.
Are we going to have one in the future, do you think?
Well, I think there's a good chance we will. Mm. I would say at the moment most people feel the city area would be better governed by a directly elected mayor. Now, not one on top of the Lord Mayor or in addition to the Lord Mayor or as an extra layer on top. I think you'd have to integrate it into the system and, in fact, use it as an opportunity to make things more efficient. But the reason why there is some impetus for it now, and your question is a good one, is because there is due to be a popular vote just for Dublin next May, the same time as the local and European elections, to see if Dubliners want, in principle, a directly elected mayor.
But this won't be a vote for a particular person.
Correct.
It's just like a plebiscite.
Exactly, like a plebiscite on the principle of whether the city... The and it will be for the people living in the four Dublin local authorities, so Dunleary, South Dublin and Fingal, as well as Dublin City. And what the government have asked the Lord Mayor of Dublin to do is to bring together a forum of the four local authorities to meet, to discuss the issue, and to put a proposal to the Department of Environment and Local Government, Phil Hogan's department, to put a proposal to him by the end of the year as to whether we, the councillors in the Dublin area, think it's a good idea. And then it'll be for the department to put that to a vote in May next year.
What's wrong with the system as it stands? I mean, you're a barrister, you're highly qualified.
Yeah.
You don't as such have a lot of executive power, but you have,
correct.
But you have a lot of ceremonial and symbolic duties.
Yeah.
There is a city manager, two of them.
Yeah.
Is there a need for a direct mayor?
Well, at the moment you have a little bit of incoherence in the sense that, you know, for most people, the issues that affect the city don't stop at any of the boundaries. There's not a huge logic to the boundaries. I mean, if you're driving south from Dublin and you pass from into Booterstown, you know, people don't go in their own mind, I'm now in Dunleary, Rathdown, or if they cross the Dodder, I'm now in South Dublin County Council. But yet, if you think of things like the rivers and the coast, and one of the ideas that I'm very keen to push, you know, dedicated cycleways along the canals, the rivers and the coast, that involves all four local authorities. But perhaps one of the biggest examples of where things fell down in Dublin in recent years, although we have made quite a bit of progress in the last year or two, is transport. Dublin, up until two or three years ago, was very poorly served in transport terms for a city of really a million people. It wasn't linked up. You didn't have an integrated ticketing system. You didn't have the transport companies working together. In fact, you had 21 different bodies with some say on transport. So what that meant was that even simple common sense ideas took a long time to happen. Now, if you had a directly elected mayor, one of the key things, amongst others, I think you would see a responsibility for is the transport issue. Now, we have made some improvements there. I mean, Alan Kelly is the junior minister for transport with responsibility for the LEAP card. We have the real-time passenger information for the buses. We're joining up the two Lewis lines. But these things should have been in from the start.
Yeah.
And in a way, one of the reasons why I think that didn't happen is, it's a little bit like this. When the transport in Dublin was bad, there was no one actually at fault. There was no one to blame. And that's one of the reasons why it wasn't working, because no one was really on the hook for it not working.
It fell between two stools.
It fell between a whole load of stools, yeah.
In your acceptance speech, you said that one in five Dubliners are non-Irish.
Yeah.
Do you see yourself as mayor of all the people of Dublin?
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
Can you give us any idea, what would you do maybe to encourage integration or to encourage more, I suppose, acceptance of different cultures?
Yeah, well, I suppose the first thing is that, yeah, you're quite right, it is one in five who describe themselves as non-Irish in the Dublin City Council area. So there's just over half a million people in the Dublin City Council area. So that's, you know, more than 100,000 people. Now, that's actually not surprising, because almost in most countries you'll find, particularly successful, developed countries, the capital city will always have a diverse population. Mm. So then the task is, what is the city doing, and the people who are charged with making progress with the city, what are they doing to integrate people, to make sure everyone has their say? And so that's the thing that's absolutely key. So one of the things straight away, for example, when you ask, you know, is the Lord Mayor for all the people living in the city? Everybody who resides in the city can vote. Mm. So you don't have to be in... Okay, you do need to be an EU citizen to vote in the European elections. You need to be an Irish citizen or UK to vote in the general election, and an Irish citizen to vote for president. But everybody living in Dublin can vote in the local elections. So I would like to see all of those groups getting involved in the debates about the city. So it's not that I have necessary solutions for how to integrate. It's more that, if we're to do this successfully, you might say, what will it look like? What it will look like, in my view, is that in 20 or 30 years, what you would see is, you know, you or your successor could be interviewing a Lord Mayor who maybe whose family was from India, the city manager, maybe their family, his or her family was from China, the assistant commissioner of the guards, maybe his or her family was from Africa. You sometimes see that in US cities, where they basically say, if you're in the city, if you're living in it, you're involved and you have a stake. So, I mean, I would like to see, for example, some of the communities that own lots of shops in certain areas want to make sure that they're at the table debating rates, debating litter, debating graffiti, debating the public realm, and that they're saying, you know, you have a stake in this city, be at the table arguing for what you want. And so it's about sort of promoting leadership, and I want to work with there are a lot of groups actually in the city that are dealing with, from a variety of migrant rights to asylum seekers to some of the multicultural issues. But it's really about bringing people together, and I think it's one of the roles of the Lord Mayor, and partly why the Mansion House is here as an asset for the city, is to bring people in. And that's historically how it was used. You bring people in, you put them around a table or put them in a room, and you get them to discussing the issues of the city. And the big thing is, the door is open to everyone.
Oisin, you said that hard choices had to be made in your acceptance speech.
Yeah.
Again, going back to that, you spoke about height or density and vacant sites.
Yeah.
In the city centre.
Yeah.
Vacant sites, would you suggest a tax on vacant sites? Or?
That's exactly one of the proposals I want to make. And in fact, I'm hoping to convene in the next week or possibly week and a half a task force to put together a proposal which we will deliver to the Department of Finance by the end of July to get it in time for the budget, requesting the department to let us impose a levy on sites that are zoned for development but that are vacant or undeveloped. Because if the city is to grow, and I believe there's a great opportunity for the city in the future to be a gateway into Europe for business, we can't go back to sprawl, because the economic and human terms that are huge.
But you can do that under the Derelict Sites Act.
Yeah, derelict sites, though, is limited in the sense that the site has to be actually derelict. You could have, though, a vacant site that just has a surface car park, and it wouldn't, in theory, be derelict.
Yeah.
But it's bad use of land.
But can you honestly tax people for not developing land if they just literally don't have the money? They don't have the customers, the clients to move into buildings. There's, you know, vacant offices all over Dublin.
Yeah, well, this is a sort of a put-up or sell-up type of proposal, that either you develop or you sell-up. I mean, if you don't have the money to develop, then... See, there is the way I look at it is this way. There is a cost to the citizens of... And I'm only talking about the city centre. I'm not talking about land outside the city centre, because there are more difficult issues there. But in my view, we should not have undeveloped vacant sites in the city centre, because there is a cost. There's a cost to the people who then have to live further out, who have to drive or travel into work on public transport, who are spending time doing that when they could be, or businesses that can't get into the city centre and so on. And rents are still, there are still rents that cost business quite a lot. So we need to, so that's one of the choices and one of the issues. The other one, though, you're right, is about height and density. At the moment, and we'll be doing this in the second half of this year, we are tasked with putting together a new development plan for the Docklands area. So as some of your listeners might know, there was an entity called the Dublin Docklands Authority. It fell into disrepute. Government announced last year it was going to disband it, and they transferred the planning responsibility over to us. So we're in the process of trying to put together a plan for the Docklands area. So to pinpoint that for people, it's like where the National Convention Centre is on the north side and where the Grand Canal Dock area is on the south side. Now, in actual fact, on the south side, a third of the land is still available for development, and on the north side in that area, about half the land is. Now, that it's a great part of the city. I was actually down there this afternoon at the National College of Ireland.
I think the tall ships...
I mean, there's a real sense that it actually is a very pleasant place to be. About a third of the surface area is water, which is a really nice feature to be around, whether you're working or living. And 80% of the people who live in the area can walk or cycle to work. We're going to expand the Dublin bike scheme down there. The residential developments down there are working well. There's literally no vacancies in those. Shops are doing well. The Market Hotel is now opened and is doing very, very well and looks very popular. So there's a load of potential, but we have to make sure that that is an area that should be at the heart of the next stage of development of the city. Because if you're living down there, you are going to provide for a vibrant, sustainable city. What we don't want is to go back to the more sprawl-orientated development.
The Strumpet City kind of thing. Mm. One final question, Oisin. Are you looking forward to the year? And if so, what are you really, really looking forward to?
Yeah, well, I'm really looking forward to the year. The last 5 or 6 weeks getting ready and talking to people, it hit me more than I thought how much goodwill there was towards the city. So I met with quite a lot of people to discuss what they thought about the city, and there's huge goodwill, and it's not just in community groups and the public servants and in the civic offices, also amongst businesses and other stakeholders who really want to see the city thrive, and who I think really feel there's great potential for the city. So my hope is to put as much energy as I can into this. It's only for a year, so in that sense it's a short opportunity, but it's to try to get my shoulder behind as many good ideas and to see the city be in a better place in a year's time than it is now.
Oisin Quinn, Lord Mayor of Dublin, thank you very, very much for joining us this morning.